From deep in the heart of flyover country, this is Spin Sold Separately.
Well, hey, look at that. We got a big voice guy. Thanks, big voice guy.
You're welcome.
And friendly, too. Well, hey, that's all right. Welcome back, everybody, to Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Thank you once again for joining us. So happy you're here, and boy, do I have a lot to say today. This is what I get. You know that nice stuff I said about CNN that last episode? I take it all back. I don't know if you've heard about this mess with Mehdi Hasan and Ryan Gruduski. Apparently on CNN, you can label every single Trump voter a Nazi, and that's fine. But in return, if somebody makes a joke about the person making that comment being a little too close to a particular terrorist organization, well, they're fired. So unbelievable and so typical CNN. I take it all back. I tried to be nice. This is what I get. Anyway. Apparently, I ticked off the audio gods by daring to mention I was not completely thrilled with the audio quality of the first episode. Again, not terrible, but holy moly, that second one. And I apologize for the obvious changes in volume. I don't know exactly what was going on there. My apologies. I think it might have had something to do with my mini fridge. I had to bring that in from the garage because we've got winter coming here in the cornfields and I can't leave a functioning refrigerator out in my unheated garage. So I had to bring it down closer to where I have my setup here. And I think that might have been messing with it. And I promise you, I don't use a ton of notes, but I promise I will try to make it sound like the microphone I am using here is not buried underneath the papers I'm shuffling around. I picked that up too. But, you know, I liked the content so much of that second episode, I didn't want to mess with it too much, but I had to make some really tight edits, and I know it wasn't completely fluid. So, again, your patience is greatly appreciated as I try to train myself how to be an audio editor. It is not something I have ever dabbled in before, so, again, I'm doing this on the fly, so your patience greatly appreciated. A couple of cleanups from that second episode. I think I mistakenly referred to my favorite DC politician, Chuck Schumer, as the minority leader at one point in that episode. I know I corrected it at least once, maybe twice the rest of the show, but I'm pretty sure I used the word minority. He is obviously the Senate majority leader. And when I referred back to 1994, talking about Bill Clinton working with Newt Gingrich on balancing the budget, it had been exactly 40 years. 40 straight years that the Democrats had controlled the House of Representatives until 1994. That's amazing. I still can't believe that's real. 40 straight years that Democrats controlled the House. Funny how the Republicans never suggested, breaking the system. They just waited their turn and everything worked out okay. But that's a subject for another day. And yes, Joe Biden's letter to the world, letting them know that he was not going to be running again. Yes, that was posted on X, as I suspected. So always want to make sure if I made a mistake or if I even think I might have made a mistake, I am going to do my best to clean it up as soon as possible because I am not here to mislead anyone. There is plenty of misleading going on out there, as we will get to momentarily here. And I am not going to be part of that. As I have said right from the start, and as the name of the show implies, I am not here to shape your opinion by giving you selectively edited stories that are designed to produce a certain outcome. We are going to discuss the stories as they are, and we will form our own opinions about them. And I'm so glad that you are here with me on this journey. I'm having so much fun with this. I sincerely appreciate you lending me your ear once again. We are going to focus very heavily on my feelings on Donald Trump today. And the next episode will focus on Kamala Harris and the platform put out by her campaign and the DNC leading into the election, which is hard to believe as of this recording is exactly 1 week away. 1 week away. We're going to be waiting for polls to close on the East Coast, and boy, oh boy, that's going to be some kind of night. No one knows what to expect. These polls, they're useless. They're absolutely useless. Every single one is within their own margin of error, which means it might be accurate, it might not be. It's going to come down to the wire. And whoever you are supporting, don't take anything for granted. Make sure you make the effort and get out there and vote. There is early voting open in almost every state, if not every state. Make sure you get to the polls on Election Day. Your employer is under obligation to give you a chance to get to the polls that day. We talked about it at my work today. Make sure you get there. Make sure your voice is heard. And like I said in the last episode, make sure the vote you're casting, make sure that opinion is factually based. That's all I ask. Whoever you vote for, make sure you're doing it based on fact. And make sure you're doing it based on what's in your heart, not because of any particular political party. And I would like to amend one of my focuses from episode 2. I mean, yes, vote what's in your heart, but don't be afraid to use your head, too. Don't be afraid to believe what is right there in front of you, even though you might be being told by the legacy media not to believe your lying eyes. Trust your instincts. Make sure you are using factually based analysis to cast your vote, whichever way you go, but make sure you get there. So, Donald J. Trump. I am going to go through a brief life history of his here. Don't worry, it's not going to take up the whole show, but I feel it necessary, if for no other reason than this man is spoken about in the most vile, disgusting terms I have ever heard in all of the public discourse I have absorbed over my 46 years. I think it's important to remind a certain segment of the population that this is, in fact, a human being. A brother, a father, a grandfather, a husband, and he should be talked about as such. He's open to criticism like any other human being. None of us are perfect. We are all flawed. But the way this man has been talked about is another reason why I am sitting in this chair today. Like I said, so many things have led to this. But a brief history on our 45th and perhaps 47th president. A good portion of this life review was taken from a publication called The Atlantic, which is no fan of the former president. He is the fourth of five kids. His father, Fred, owned a real estate company and was very successful. He was set up for success. Yes, he was born into a wealthy family. But he absolutely took it to another level and made the Trump name into a national brand. Now, he was first interviewed on a national stage by Tom Brokaw in 1980. Now, this is a New York real estate investor. He had not really branched out from there up to that point, but his outward personality had already captivated a lot of the local media. And Tom Brokaw, obviously a very big name in the history of media, interviewed him in 1980, and that really launched Trump into national recognition. His first appearance on 60 Minutes was in 1985, and even back then, he was complaining about the media's portrayal of him. He told Mike Wallace that he felt the media was portraying him as, quote, more sinister, unquote, than he felt like was fair. He wrote The Art of the Deal, a book published in 1987 about his tactics in the cutthroat business that is New York real estate. David Letterman had him on his show in 1987. Oprah had Donald Trump on her show in 1988, involving a very wide-ranging discussion in which Trump wouldn't, quote, rule out a turn to politics when asked by Oprah, who is a very big fan of his back then, by the way. It's a very interesting clip to go back and watch. He continued his national interview tour throughout the 1990s, becoming more and more recognized. He would start appearing on various TV shows, appeared in various movies, probably a few that you know. Kind of made the rounds. He was obviously very popular in that Hollywood circle. My, how things have changed, but we'll get to that. He started The Apprentice in 2004. And whatever the ratings were, obviously they are disputed. Trump says they were the greatest ratings ever, greatest TV show in the history of TV shows. And, of course, his critics would say, well, no, it wasn't number one. It wasn't the greatest ever, blah, blah, blah. It was obviously a very popular show. It ran all the way until he announced in 2015, and actually went on a little bit beyond that, but obviously he turned his attention elsewhere in 2015. He's always had an adversarial relationship with the media, always has claimed that they treat him unfairly. I think an important thing to remember is he's not a politician. I know that's how we view him now, especially having been president for 4 years and this being his third presidential run. We view him as a politician today. Up until 2015, that's not what he was. His entire life, he had never run for office. Never held an office, never ran for one. He was a businessman. He was in real estate. He was involved in negotiations and winning people over and, you know, talking like a salesman, talking in superlatives. Like I said, the best ever, greatest ever. Never seen anything like it before. He's not a polished speaker, obviously. He's not the most articulate human being ever to be interviewed. But he hasn't spent his life as a politician, carefully choosing his words so as not to isolate any potential voters. He deals with union bosses. At least up until then, he dealt with union bosses, construction companies. As my inspiration, Megyn Kelly, would say, he doesn't speak the Queen's English. He thinks something and he says it. No filter. It just comes out. For better or for worse. But for all the snobs that seem to get so upset by his lack of sophisticated dialect, that is one of the things that has endeared him to his core supporters. And I think the relationships that he built with union bosses, construction workers, you know, people that build stuff, I think that has helped him relate to the average worker in a way that most politicians cannot. He hasn't spent his career in elite political circles. He's kind of had it, you know, he's obviously of the quote-unquote elite, another one of my least favorite buzzwords of the 21st century, but he's always had a way with ordinary people. That is the impression I've had of him, even before he ran. He just had a way of, even as a multi-billionaire, he had a way of relating to people that most people in that stratosphere just can't do. And you can see that in how he engages with people. Average people in fast food restaurants, or when he stops his motorcade to thank a police officer that is blocking one of the side streets to allow his motorcade to pass. He's done that. He just stops the motorcade and gets out, of course, to the horror of his Secret Service staff. But he's done that. He relates with people on a level that very few politicians can do, at least authentically. And they all loved him. All these celebrities that can't get enough of their face on the TV talking about how horrible he is. All these people, Oprah, Whoopi, these celebrities across the country, Letterman, they all loved him. Some of them asked him to run openly. Go back and look at that Oprah interview again. She said America needed him. All those movie cameos. He was in Days of Our Lives, for crying out loud. You want to talk about something watched largely by suburban women, who he seems to have such a problem with? I mean, doesn't seem to, absolutely has a problem with. He'd make cameo appearances on there. He was all over pop culture, right up until he came down that golden escalator at Trump Tower and dared to announce his candidacy for president as a Republican in the 2016 race. At that time, he started to make his political beliefs a little more clear. He was very passionate about the situation with the border right from the start in very, very colorful language. He was very open about his disdain for the way China was manipulating their currency, causing a severe trade imbalance that has long been troubling our country and costing the U.S. jobs. He was sick of watching the American worker pay the price for a lot of this new globalization that he clearly was not a fan of. It didn't take long for the media coverage of him to become far more adversarial. And it hit a fever pitch when he actually won in 2016 over Hillary Clinton. She was the chosen one, the candidate of destiny. No one gave Trump a chance. I'm not even sure if he really thought he had a chance to win that. If I remember right, the betting odds were somewhere in the 90-10 range, leading right up to Election Day in 2016. No one gave him a chance. He was supposed to be Hillary's sacrificial lamb. But he had the nerve to win. And boy, oh boy, did that change absolutely everything. This fraught relationship that he had with the media continued throughout his first term and only got worse as it went on. Now let's move on to his actual presidency, which, again, a good chunk of the legacy media forgets actually happened. They talk about him as if he's this unknown quantity that's going to get into office and do all these terrible things. Unlike most presidential elections in our country's history, we actually have an actual Trump administration to go back and review. 4 years of a Trump presidency to go back and review. And we're going to do that real quick here because I think it's worth revisiting. We're not going to whitewash history here and pretend that this man wasn't president for 4 years and didn't actually do stuff and not do stuff. Let's face it, his presidency was largely stolen from him. Between all the media misrepresentations, starting right off the bat, before he even took office, with the Russian collusion story, which was a complete hoax. This is from CNN. Yes, that's CNN. They finally had to come clean about this. This Russiagate hoax was completely based on something known as the Steele dossier, which was a piece of op-ed research with very, very tight connections to the Hillary Clinton campaign. A lot of money going back and forth. Now, Steele was a retired British spy, and this dossier of his, on which this entire collusion accusation was based, was full of outrageous claims of Russian interference, that Vladimir Putin had somehow gotten something on Trump, and that Trump was nothing more than a Putin puppet, a Russian asset. I mean, the whole thing, right from the start, was swimming in Democrat propaganda. This thing dropped days before he took office. The efforts to undermine his administration, they started before he even took office. This investigation lasted almost 2 years with unlimited resources and unlimited motivations from those involved to find a crime. This involved multiple agencies, a special counsel named Robert Mueller. There was a lot of people involved in this investigation across multiple agencies that wanted nothing more than to see Donald Trump found guilty of this, that wanted so badly for this to be true. Now, this whole thing, again, this went on for 2 years. So much money, millions and millions of dollars, the manpower that was wasted on this thing. You want to talk about government waste? I mean, we're going to get into that in detail in the future here after the election, but holy moly. The amount of resources and manpower that was thrown into the fire on this. Now, the thing has been completely debunked. Mueller came out with his report, found absolutely no evidence of collusion. None whatsoever. The sources of this dossier that reported to Christopher Steele, absolutely no credibility. This whole thing was found to be very, very heavily involved with, and this is CNN's word here, very well-connected Democrats. It was weaponized, and it was grossly mishandled by the agencies involved, the FBI, the CIA. Some of this stuff is really, really disgusting. These agencies in which we put our blind trust to protect us and do the right thing for the American people and keep us safe and keep us secure, there were a lot of people doing a lot of bad stuff here. And of course, the media was a willing accomplice. Deliberate malpractice on an almost incomprehensible level. Congressman Adam Schiff, Democrat, California, was on TV night after night after night. Oh, we've got the goods. We're closing in. Well, you just wait. Oh, we've got the goods on. I can't tell you what it is right now, but oh, it's there. Oh, I can't wait to share it with you. Every single night on these legacy networks, most notably MSNBC. But there were others. All of it was crap. Every bit of it. 2 year investigation by a lot of people that wanted nothing more than to prove it true came up with nothing. Then there was the first impeachment. The articles of impeachment state that President Trump abused his power and obstructed Congress. This relates to a call that President Trump had with Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, in which he floated the idea that he would like Zelensky to take a look at what this whole mess with, he didn't even fully name them by name, he did use the name Biden, what was going on with this prosecutor over there and this company that Hunter Biden was working for and Joe Biden somehow got involved. And he basically said, you know, look into this. This stinks. I don't like this. Do us a favor and look into this, was basically what the president said. And he was impeached for it. This was somehow spun into an abuse of power, asking a foreign leader to investigate his political opponents. Oh, boy. I have so much to say. I'm going to try to narrow it down here. Now, this was said in a very passive way. He used phrases like, if you would, if you could. Trump says things like this all the time. He released the transcript 2 months later. You can go and read it for yourself. It's out there. I found it in 2 seconds. I read it. I don't see it. I don't see how on earth we impeached a president over this. It sounds to me, now I'm not a politician, I'm not a lawyer. To me, it sounds like two presidents talking. They mentioned, Trump mentioned Biden and Biden's son. He did not use Hunter's name. He didn't even use the name of the company that Hunter was working for at the time. No mention of any aid, of any quid pro quo. He didn't demand, he asked. He said, if it's at all possible, look into this. And he got impeached for it. Now, thankfully, he was acquitted in the Senate. But just to give you a flavor of the double standard at work here, I want to read you a quote by none other than our current president, Joe Biden, speaking at the Council on Foreign Relations in 2018. This is a direct quote from Joe Biden. Quote, I was going over for the 12th or 13th time to Kyiv to announce another billion-dollar loan guarantee. And I had gotten commitment from Porchenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said, they were walking out of the press conference, and I said, no, we're not going to give you the $1 billion. And they said, you've got no authority. You're not the president. And I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting that $1 billion. I said, you're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here. I think it was, 6 hours? I look and I said, we're leaving here in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch, he got fired. End quote. That prosecutor to which he is referring was investigating a company called Burisma, which is a Ukrainian oil company for whom Hunter Biden was a very well-compensated board member. Very well-compensated and completely unqualified, I might add. Yes, the son at the time of a former vice president, soon to be future president, was a board member for an oil company in Ukraine. Now, if that doesn't stink of all kinds of conflicts of interest, I don't even know where to start. But for the purposes of this discussion, that quote right there is every bit as bad, and in my opinion, much worse. Because this wasn't some comment on a phone call saying, you know, hey, can you take a look at this? This was a direct threat. This was real policy made in real time with American taxpayer money in clearly a threatening, you do this or else kind of way. Trump got impeached. Go back and read the phone call. None of what he said in that phone call comes remotely close to that quote from Joe Biden. Joe Biden never faced any consequences for that. To this day, nothing. There's been some congressional investigations about it, but nothing's come of it. So we get through that, then COVID hits. Now, we did, by all measurable statistics, have one of the strongest economies in recent American history going at the time. Interest rates were low, jobs were plentiful, incomes at the bottom of the spectrum had risen at rates that had not been seen in decades. The wealth gap narrowed under Trump. People forget that. A lot of people are really angry about the income gap in this country, myself included. Future episodes coming. But his policies managed to narrow that gap, albeit by a slim margin, but it narrowed. Well, then we had to shut everything down. You all remember what it was like. Early 2020, when absolutely no one knew what was going on, we were getting these horrifying videos out of China. So we had to shut everything down. Once we knew it was here, and in my opinion, at the outset, that was the prudent thing to do. But it didn't come without a cost. Millions of people lost their jobs almost overnight. Years of wealth creation was wiped out. Complete uncertainty. People were dying. And no one knew what it was. Like I said, I understand it. I agreed with it at the time. Even Trump knew this was something he had to do, even though he knew, I mean, let's face it, his biggest accomplishment of his first term, undoubtedly, was the economy. And there were others, and we'll get into those here. It took months to stabilize things. Now, Trump, to his credit, realized relatively early on, okay, we're kind of through the worst of this. We can't stay shut down forever. We've got to get things back open. And this was where the administrative state, and in particular, Anthony Fauci, the head of the NIH, basically wrestled control from him. And this whole administrative state started to work rather openly against him. And then in the midst of all this, the George Floyd riots break out. This is right in the middle of, I mean, peak COVID. The riots break out nationwide, every major city, unrest for days, riots, fires, a lot of protests. They didn't all turn into riots, but a lot of them did. Our cities burned for nights on end, billions and billions of dollars in damage. Hundreds of police officers were injured. And ultimately, it took the National Guard in some cases to quell some of these riots. It was an entire summer of racial unrest. Oh, and if that wasn't enough, now we're going to roll into the 2020 election. With all of this racial tension going on, COVID still very much a centerpiece in our lives, kids still out of school, tons of people out of work. But we had to have a presidential election. Now, there was a lot of shady stuff that happened in this election. And I said yesterday, I said in the last episode, and I'll say it again, yes, Biden won. Everybody hear that? Okay, good. There was a lot of shady stuff that happened here. Lots of changes to voting laws, many of them in violation of their own state's constitutions. It was a very weird campaign. Joe Biden barely went outside, barely campaigned at all. Meanwhile, the entire left is uber critical of the Trump administration's vaccine efforts. You remember all the people posting on their social media, I'll never take a Trump vaccine, as if Donald Trump is the one in the lab just mixing chemicals together and injecting it into lab rats?
Well, let's see if this will work. Well, that didn't work. Let's try something different.
So ridiculous. Mail-in ballots galore. I mean, sent all over the place. Just, I don't know how much fraud took place in this election, but just the fact that we made it so vulnerable to fraud. I understand in 2020, we kind of had to do what we had to do. We didn't want the fear of COVID, which was still very real at the time, especially for older generations. We didn't want that to interfere with people's ability to vote. So some of this I agreed with, but we had mail-in ballots all over the place. And then you mix in the social media interference, which is, it was obvious at the time if you were paying attention, but has really come to light lately. The suppression of stories, the Hunter Biden laptop story, which was more than just about Hunter Biden sniffing whatever it was he was sniffing. There was some real stuff in there about potential corruption at the highest levels. And we'll get into this more specifically. I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but that story, which has been completely proven true, was at the time completely suppressed by social media companies under pressure from the Biden campaign. A coordinated effort from the Biden campaign and intelligence officials. Remember that letter that 51 former intelligence officials signed saying that the Hunter Biden laptop had all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation? A complete lie. The thing was completely valid. And we'll get into all of it. It had been in possession of law enforcement. Had already been verified. Now, like they say, don't ever let the truth get in the way of a good narrative. And they have since admitted it. Mark Zuckerberg testified in front of Congress that yes, his company, Meta, Facebook, was pressured by the administrative state in this country to suppress these stories in the name of disinformation. Then when you actually got to the election, it took some states days to count ballots. Days. This is unacceptable. In 2024, when we're watching people launch rockets, flip them around, and land them basically on a piece of paper from which they were launched, we can't count votes in less than 4 or 5 days. Completely unacceptable. You know it and I know it. the state of Florida was done counting within 2 hours of the polls closing. 2 hours of their polls closing. They're the third most populous state. I think we all need to follow Florida's lead on how to count votes. I mean, that's not even political. That's just, this is how you do it. Let's see what Florida's doing, and everybody should do it. Anyway, we went to bed that night with a lot of Republicans with a lot of big leads, and slowly, over the course of the next 4 or 5 days, a lot of Democrats made up an awful lot of ground, including Joe Biden, who was declared the winner of that election 4 days later. 4 days. This left a lot of bad tastes in the mouths of not just Trump fans, but anyone, I'd like to think anyone that has concern about the sanctity of our elections. This left a lot more questions than answers. A lot of people were confused, and a lot of people were justifiably upset. Which obviously leads to January 6th. Now, the protest that had been set up there that Trump agreed to speak at, this was a legal protest. The organizers of this protest had permits that were issued by Capitol Police. Congressional authorities, they knew this was coming. They didn't increase security, and this has been talked about in the years since as well. So Trump gives this speech and very clearly says, peacefully and patriotically, make your voices heard. At which point, this protest moved to the Capitol. Now, they did not have a permit to go to the Capitol. This is where the trouble starts. And this protest, very obviously, it's all over your TV, breaks into a riot. Now, not everyone was rioting, but a fair amount of people were. One person was killed that day. Rioter Ashley Babbitt was shot and killed by a Capitol Police officer. Three other Trump supporters died that day as well. Two heart attacks, one accidental overdose. Five law enforcement officers eventually died as well. One stroke, and sadly, four suicides. Now, all of this is awful. I am not here to excuse any of it. All of this was awful, but it is important to get these details right and accurate. Personally, myself, I hated every bit of it. I hated Trump's behavior around that time and in the days following. I hated it. I hated the protest. The protest and where it was a bad idea right from the start. I loathe the rioters. I remember sitting in my living room watching this unfold, and I said out loud some version of, you people are giving your opponents all the visual ammunition they will ever need. They are going to beat this into the ground years from now. This is going to be shown on TV as a reason not to vote for Republicans. I remember watching it like that. All of it. I hated every bit of January 6th. Have I made that clear? For this, he was impeached yet again on January 13th, 2021. We'll get into that in a second here. Now, I looked at a January 5th, 2024 article by a man named Daniel Miller, and this was contributed to by the AP as well, talking very specifically about the state of the investigations into the January 6th riot. 3 years of investigations. There have been almost 1,100 arrests, and almost 600 have pled guilty. 560 have been sentenced, 335 of those to jail time. Now again, this was awful. That whole display was terrible in every conceivable way. Everyone that has gotten arrested, tried, found guilty, sentenced, everyone deserved what they got. This was a protest turned riot. This was not an insurrection. Insurrection is an actual crime. Look it up. According to Cornell Law School, 18 U.S. Code 2383, it has an actual definition. Now, in all of these cases, all of those charges, all of the people who are currently sitting in prison where they belong, not one of them was charged with insurrection. Not one. And you know, the Biden DOJ that has been investigating this, you know they wanted it. They had every motivation to find one possible way they could wedge that word that particular charge into a case, especially against Trump. But if not against Trump, at least to some of the rioters. There have been zero charges of insurrection against Trump or anyone else. This was a horrible day. The whole thing was disgusting. It was awful. It was terrible. It should never be repeated. It was not an insurrection. So, I hope I've made that completely clear, my feelings on January 6th. Now, to summarize Trump's first term, he had his first term basically taken from him. Billions of dollars and hours went into the Russiagate scandal, the bogus impeachment that took all kinds of time away from Congress from actually doing things that could have helped the country, the endless media malpractice and misrepresentation, Nancy Pelosi tearing up his speech at the State of the Union, ridiculous theater, COVID ruining a strong economy. But let's not forget, Donald Trump, throughout all his administration, no new wars. First president of my lifetime not to have a new war start under his administration. The Abraham Accords in the Middle East were generating peace in that part of the world that had not been seen in a generation, if ever. Peace agreements between Israel and Arab-led countries, some of whom would have been very confrontational with Israel, they were signing peace accords. Peace was finally starting to percolate in the Middle East under Trump. There was no movement by any of our adversaries. North Korea, China, Iran, Russia. We largely had peace, and he was working on getting out of Afghanistan. Didn't get it done, but he was trying. The 2020 election wasn't stolen, but it was rigged. 100% rigged. The social media interference, the administrative state, that's election interference. That's rigging the election. Not stolen, but it absolutely was rigged. The ridiculous impeachment number 2 for January 6th, 1 week before he left office, it was completely performative, served absolutely no purpose other than to waste more of Congress's time and embarrass him. That's what it was done to do. Then, after a couple of years, he announces for 2024. And, oh, bring on the lawsuits. All of a sudden, there were 4 indictments of a former president. You remember how groundbreaking this was. Remember, this has never been done in the history of our country. No former president has ever been indicted for anything, ever. First, you've got the New York hush money case. This is a case with no victim. This is a version of a bookkeeping crime on a hush money payment to a porn star named Stormy Daniels. Critics of the former president said that this was an improper use of campaign funds. So apparently he was supposed to use campaign contributions to pay off the porn star to keep her mouth shut about their alleged affair. This was the case for which we decided to break 2.5 centuries of precedent over. And yes, he was found guilty. Now, that they keep saying 34, or it's something in the 30. I think it's 34. 34 felony charges. It all relates to this one thing. This is what we broke the glass for. This is what we broke the 250 years of not indicting our former presidents over. Oh, but the media got what they wanted. Now they can call him a convicted felon. That is the crime to which they are referring. A bookkeeping crime, if you can call it a crime, about a hush money payment made to Stormy Daniels. Hush money payments are nothing new. They happen all the time in politics, in big business, in Hollywood. A lot of the people you know and probably admire are probably neck deep in hush money payments. Second case was the Florida documents case, where Trump allegedly brought classified documents out of the White House with him when he left. Trump, as president, had the power to declassify whatever he wanted. Now, there is a tape out there of him obviously holding a document that he did not declassify, and he made that very clear on the tape, and this tape is problematic. He's on tape saying to somebody at the table that he had, like, I've got this document. I could have declassified it, but I didn't declassify. I didn't declassify it. It's sitting right here. Not wise. Again, this kind of behavior is not uncommon among former presidents. Bill Clinton has documents. Joe Biden had documents. Even having never been president, he had classified documents in his possession. Now, he never had the power to declassify. But again, that's the wrong person. Don't look over there. Look over here. Look at the shiny object over here. It's very common to take documents upon leaving office. Now, whether he should have taken these particular documents, obviously up for discussion, and he has been indicted for it in Florida. Then you've got the Georgia election case involving election challenges and conversations that he had with Georgia Republicans, saying things like, I only need 11,000 votes. Find me 11,780 votes. Now, he obviously wasn't telling them to manufacture votes. But of course, those who would love to see him convicted say that that's exactly what he was doing. He was making a reference to how small the margin was and that any recounts that had not been done yet should probably be done. Now, the DA overseeing this case made the critical lapse in judgment of getting romantically involved with her special prosecutor. All kinds of shady stuff going on here. Weird compensation schedules that didn't really fit what other special prosecutors were making. Lavish trips that these two took together. Question about who paid for what. Most of it was paid by him. Was that a reason for her to keep the case going? Was that a reason for her to pay him more? Very seedy stuff going on here. Now, ultimately, the judge dismissed the special prosecutor, and this case is currently on appeal as Trump's team is trying to get them to dismiss the district attorney who got sexually involved with the special prosecutor. So this case is a mess. And then you've got the DC election case involving all the January 6th stuff. This one's currently in review as to what behavior is actually able to be charged, what can be charged of a former president. Again, no charge of insurrection. Now, this special prosecutor has his own quagmire going on as he was not properly appointed, which is a whole other legal mess. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to get in the weeds here. But this one's hung up in legal challenges. Then you've got the civil cases in New York. Now, the attorney general for the state of New York is a woman named Letitia James. She brought this fraud case on Trump and his businesses, claiming that he had overstated the value of his assets when applying for loans at some of the banks that he obtained financing from. This is another case with no victim. The banks weren't complaining. The loans were repaid on time and in full. There was no victim here. But the state sued him and his corporation for $250 million. The judge awarded $464 million in this civil suit to the state. Now, Letitia James, who was supposed to be an impartial officer of the law as attorney general, in the days after this verdict was rendered, tweeted out on a daily basis the $114,000 daily interest charge that was being added to this judgment every day that Trump couldn't come up with $464 million cash. Which, even for a multi-billionaire like Donald Trump, coming up with that kind of cash isn't exactly something you can do overnight. Well, but that didn't stop the impartial officer of the law, Attorney General of the state of New York, from tweeting every day, adding another $114,000 to that judgment. Then there's the E. Jean Carroll case, which was an alleged sexual assault from back in the 1990s, a case that was completely devoid of any details. There were no witnesses. Carol herself couldn't even remember what year it took place in. This was over 30 years later. But what New York had done was they had just changed the law to open a one-time-only six-month window for alleged abuse victims to go back and sue their alleged abusers even after the statute of limitations had expired. That was the law change that allowed E. Jean Carroll to even bring this lawsuit against Trump in the first place. Again, a civil suit. The jury awarded $5 million, and a second jury awarded $83 million more in a defamation suit because Trump had the audacity to not agree with the jury's verdict and basically went out there and said, I don't know who this E. Jean Carroll is. She's crazy. I don't know her. I've never met her. He took a picture with her once. He said that was the only interaction they ever had. He didn't even know who she was. Now, you can believe who you want, but that was the outcome of that case. Now, again, I'm not a lawyer, but statutes of limitations, well, they exist for a reason. They exist because people's memories degrade over time. And trying to specifically remember something that happened 30 plus years ago, again, E. Jean Carroll herself could not say what year this happened in. But apparently that was enough for a New York jury, and they convicted him. Every single one of these cases that I just laid out was brought after and only after he announced his 2024 presidential run. Donald Trump has to be the most investigated human being in history. It's a miracle he's still free. I mean, could your entire life background handle this kind of scrutiny by people that want nothing more than to make an example of you? I'm not sure how many people could hold up to that. This has been ongoing for going on 10 years now. A lot of people with a lot of resources and a lot of bad motives have been trying to put this man in prison for a decade. This is a classic case of show me the man and I'll show you the crime. You've got district attorneys and attorneys general running campaigns on get Trump. That's not how our justice system works. This rhetoric is so dangerous, and it's so dangerous that he's been shot with at least one, possibly two other attempts on his life, and the Democrats just keep going with it. They just keep going. He's Hitler. He's Mussolini. He's Stalin. It's so irresponsible. It's so childish, and it's so dangerous. This is my opinion. I am of the opinion they're trying to get him killed. Who else talks like this? Especially given what has happened to him. He gets shot, and then a couple weeks later, there's another attempt on his life down near his Florida home, and there was one more situation a couple of weeks ago that's haven't heard a whole lot of information on, but there could have been something seedy going on there too. But yet they just keep pressing. The people that said it's time to dial back the rhetoric are the ones on TV losing their ever-loving minds. The closer that this election gets, and Kamala Harris's inability to pull away and separate in this race, they're losing their minds on national television. It really is something to behold. So, that got way longer than I intended, but this is important because it is important to remember that this is a human being. And it is not beyond the realm of reason to go back and look at just how dedicated our media, our administrative state, a lot of how dedicated a lot of very powerful people were to bringing this man down and not letting him govern and completely hijack his first administration. Now, my personal feelings on the man, on the candidate. He says controversial things, okay? Now, I wanted him to run even for many years before. I've got the Twitter feed to prove it. There was a lot of people asking him to run in the early 2010s. I thought we could use an outsider like him, a businessman like him. I liked his presidency. I liked his policies. What policies he was able to get through anyway. I agreed with his policies on the border that absolutely helped our illegal immigration problem. I agreed with his policy on taxes. I pay less in taxes, and I am in very much not the top half of earners in this country. Yes, his tax cuts absolutely helped me. They might have helped people above me. They absolutely helped me. I was a huge fan of his foreign policy. The world peace that we experienced largely for those 4 years. No new wars. Peace in the Middle East. Our adversaries on their heels because they didn't know what he would do. And a certain amount of discomfort among our enemies is a good thing. We don't want them comfortable, feeling like they can do whatever the hell they want without any consequences from the United States. We were energy independent. Do you remember that? Do you remember when oil was trading negative for a couple of days because we had so much of it? His policies were good for the country. He governed as effectively as he could in the face of almost insurmountable resistance, not just from the Democrats, from both parties. Why? Why this seemingly otherworldly resistance to him? Here's my take on it. He uniquely threatens their power structure. they've built this almost impenetrable fortress in DC into which they basically only let in who they want in through funding campaigns, op-ed research on opponents. They only want people in DC that end up owing them. People that got elected largely because the power structure in DC made it so through their endless resources. Trump threatens that whole setup. He owes these people nothing. He doesn't need their money. He's beholden to no one. He doesn't need their power. He has the name recognition it takes to win elections and to fight this system. He doesn't need them. He doesn't need anything they have to offer. And he certainly doesn't owe them anything. And in this election cycle in particular, he has brought on a lot of people that I admire. Tulsi Gabbard, Elon Musk, Robert Kennedy Jr. These people have joined Trump's coalition. Let me repeat that. Only I'll use their most recent titles. Tulsi Gabbard ran for president in 2020 in the Democrat primary. Elon Musk voted for Joe Biden in 2020. He's admitted as much. And I don't think I need to explain that Robert Kennedy Jr. has been a lifelong Democrat, very, very far left on a lot of issues. This is a multi-interest, cross-party coalition that has come together in support of Donald Trump. They care about the military. They care about the health of this country. They are going to go after government waste. Can you imagine Elon Musk and the Department of, I forget what they called it, something about you better be able to justify your expenses in whatever department you're in. You better be able to show us the receipts. I can't wait for Elon Musk to get a chance to go in there and cut government waste. I think it was the Department of Government Waste or something like that. Brilliant. And J.D. Vance. Now, I'll admit, I didn't love this pick. I didn't think it was great strategically. I've been proven wrong. He's been amazing in his interviews. The way he handles the endless confrontations that he has to engage in, handling this adversarial media with class and facts and dignity, he's been great. And his backstory, Hillbilly Elegy, it's amazing. It's the true American dream story. He's not afraid to go on any network for any interview. And neither is Donald Trump, for that matter. Now, he's skipped a few this year for various reasons. Well, he didn't go on 60 Minutes. Well, because 60 Minutes made a mockery of itself when they interviewed him in 2020. And he said, no, I'm not going to go back and do that again. You guys weren't fair to me the first time. Why would I go back and do it again? Now, Donald Trump is a flawed human being, as we all are. Is he crude? Yes. Here, let's talk about crude. Here, I've got Exhibit A over here, Donald Trump. Yes, very crude. I give you Exhibit B, Bill Clinton. You know about the exploits of Bill Clinton. He has spoken at every Democrat National Convention since 1988. Spare me your moral superiority, okay? Now again, Trump speaks like a union leader on a job site. He doesn't speak like a politician. But he has been treated so incredibly unfairly. We as Americans need to reject this kind of lawfare, this kind of coordinated attack from the highest levels of the Democrat Party, the media, the administrative state. We need to reject this kind of coordinated effort to go after one man. These clearly political prosecutions. These law enforcement agents, AGs, DAs, campaigning on going after one person. What are you going to do when those guns are turned on you someday? Someday you might be on the wrong end of a district attorney running solely to come after you. Imagine that. Now, his policies are extremely moderate by political standards. His stance on abortion is completely neutral. Leave it to the states. There is no Trump abortion ban. It's a complete lie, and it's all over Kamala's ads. There's no ban on contraception. It's another complete lie. There is no talk at all about Social Security or Medicare reform. It's another lie. These are all scare tactics designed to cower you into the corner of your closet, only to leave for the purposes of going to vote for the Democrats across the board. These are all lies. Trump had an effective foreign policy. We were energy independent. We didn't rely on countries that hate us and do not share our ideals. He was an effective job creator. He didn't hate the middle of the country. And it is very clear that one political party has a lot of disdain for people like me, people that live in the middle of the country that aren't these of these this bi-coastal Harvard grad clique. No, I didn't go to Harvard. No, I'm not a tech expert from Silicon Valley. But I'm still an American citizen that works really freaking hard. I pay my taxes. I go to church. I do the right things. I try to be a good person. I am flawed, just like everyone else. He's a family man. And I do think he's a good father. Look at how his kids have turned out. They've obviously grown up with unimaginable privilege. And I don't think anybody would blame them if they ended up getting in trouble. You know, getting into trouble with drugs or getting into trouble with the law. They didn't. His grandkids clearly adore him. Listen to how his family spoke about him at the convention. I don't think you can make that stuff up. I don't think you can fake that. It's either there or it's not. There's no mysteries about this man. He says what's on his mind. Now, sometimes it gets him in trouble. But to me, it's better than keeping things hidden. He's fearless. He got right up seconds after being shot and said, fight, fight, fight. For all he knew, there could have been three shooters out there. That could have been the last thing he ever said. I'm telling you, there's something admirable about that as an American. I want that in our leader. And he was an outsider. My generation had been begging for a DC outsider for many election cycles. It seemed like every time a presidential race came around, oh, that was another Bush, another Clinton, another Kennedy. He broke that mold. He's beholden to no one. He's the only politician ever to go to DC and get poorer. He was worth $4.5 billion in 2016. In 2021, he was worth $2.4. He used a lot of his own money. But these partisan DAs keep coming after him civilly, coming after his companies. They come after him civilly because it's a much lower bar to reach. They don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt like you do in criminal court. In civil court, it's basically more likely than not. 51-49 gets you a verdict. He's an imperfect man that has lived his entire life in the spotlight. Many of his old friends have turned on him. But he stayed true to his word. He stuck with his Supreme Court nominees when almost any other president would have backed down. He saw it through. He continues to push despite the endless resistance from really powerful groups of people. And trust me, these powerful groups of people, their motives aren't pure. You might not think Trump's motives are pure. Neither are those of the people who seek to ruin him. He's a known quantity. You know what you're going to get. You're going to get good policy. You're going to get bad PR. You're going to get tweets at 2 a.m. that make you want to pull your hair out. But he creates discomfort among the DC lifer class. And to me, that is worth the price of admission all by itself. Now, I'm like twice as long as I'm supposed to be here. I apologize, but this is important stuff here. I want you to understand why I feel the way I feel. I'm not just going to put a platitude out there and just expect you to believe it or just say something and not back it up. I told you in episode 2, I'm voting for Trump. This is a very detailed dissertation as to why. I want you to know where I'm coming from here. This isn't just something that I rolled out of bed and decided one day. I'm not a registered Republican. I am not a Trump loyalist or whatever people want to label Trump's base as. I want you to understand why I feel the way I feel. Now, a few words about the Republican platform in 2024. This is courtesy of the American Presidency Project. You're going to notice a lot of things in here. You're going to notice very clearly a few things are not in here. That again, if you watch the political ads being put out there by the Democrats, I'm sorry, they're lying to you. They are. I wish it wasn't so. But I'm going to go through this whole list here. Number one, seal the border. Deport illegals. We have to do this. I know it's going to be difficult. And I know that among these untold millions of illegal immigrants in this country, I know there are some good people in there. I understand that. But we cannot set the precedent for the rest of the world that all you have to do is get here. All you have to do is get here, get on government services, and we'll handle the rest. We cannot set that precedent. Not everyone that has come here illegally are just young families looking for a better life. There are terrorists in these millions of people that have come here illegally. There are gang members. There are criminals. Yes, there are killers. We have immigration laws. Follow them. Follow them and you will be welcomed into this country with open arms because that is who we are. We want people who want to be here. But I'm sorry, you lose the benefit of the doubt when the first thing you do upon getting here is break our laws. And yes, there is an issue with migrant crime. You don't think that's true? Ask Lake and Riley's family or any other victim of crime committed by an illegal immigrant. One crime committed by an illegal immigrant is too many. These are American citizens that are being, in some cases, killed. Families permanently altered by people who don't have a right to be here. We have a process that can be followed. Does it need to be tweaked and amended? Well, that's up for debate. But the process exists. Follow it. Item number two, make America the dominant energy producer in the world. We were for a while. Wasn't it great? End inflation. No tax on tips, which is brilliant, by the way. We will get into very specific reasons why I think that. Stop outsourcing jobs. Tax cuts for workers. Defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. This is all on the 2024 Republican platform. Prevent World War III. End the weaponization of government. Stop drug cartel violence. Strengthen and modernize the military. Keep the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. This is with a bullet point here. Fight for and protect Social Security and Medicare with no cuts, including no changes to the retirement age. That is on the Republican platform for 2024. You wouldn't know that if you're watching Kamala Harris campaign ads. These are lies. Go look it up yourself. Cancel the EV mandate and reduce regulations. No critical race theory or gender ideology in publicly funded schools. Keep men out of women's sports. Deport radicals that openly support terrorist groups. 100% voter ID. Unite our country. That is the list. Again, according to the American Presidency Project, that is the 2024 Republican platform. You'll notice there is not a single word in there about abortion, contraception, or cutting Social Security or Medicare. Quite to the contrary, it says very clearly, fight for and protect Social Security and Medicare with no cuts, including no changes to the retirement age. Now, I am of the opinion that Social Security and Medicare need to be amended because they're going to go broke. That is a discussion for another day that we will get into in more detail. But all the campaign ads saying that Trump's going to ban abortion, Trump's going to end Social Security, it's all BS. It's all scare tactics. And it's shameful. It really is shameful. In my opinion, you put all of those things together, there's not one thing there I disagree with, other than I would work to protect Social Security and Medicare by reforming them so they don't implode on themselves. But again, there's nothing there I disagree with. And you put all of that together with the most moderate candidate in recent history, with a multi-interest cross-party coalition, making America healthy again, cutting government waste, seeking peace. Yeah, this is a campaign I can get behind. Now, a quick word as we finish up here about Project 2025. For those of you that don't know what it is a 900-page, I guess, far-right blueprint, if you will, that was put out by an organization called the Heritage Foundation. This is a very conservative group. Now, they've done some good things. They've done some very good things. But this is like a straight down the very, very conservative wish list. And there were a lot of voices, very conservative voices on the right whose inputs went into this. None of them were named Donald Trump. This is his quote regarding Project 2025. I have nothing to do with Project 2025. That's his quote. It's not policy. There's nothing binding about it. Trump himself has distanced himself from this completely, and it's largely folded up. Many of its contributors have left the project. All these ads saying national abortion ban, and these are all lies. The Supreme Court sent abortion back to the states in the Dobbs decision during Trump's presidency, and he has said again and again, that's where it belongs. That's what the court decided. That's where it belongs. So you can throw out any of those ads that say Trump's Project 2025 because it's not Trump's Project 2025. And he himself has said, I have nothing to do with it, and he has no plans on carrying it forward. Most of that stuff would never get through Congress anyway, even if he tried. So, there it is. Holy moly, I'm going to try to cut this down a little bit, but I appreciate you sticking with me here. This was one of those things where I didn't want to leave anything out. And I know I've said that. I've had 3 episodes now, one of which was at 30 minutes. In the next episode, I will do as deep a dive as I can on Kamala Harris and the DNC platform. I want to present it in the same way, with the same level of detail, at least as much detail as available. It is not a mystery at this point that there is not very much information out there on the DNC platform that isn't abortion good, Trump bad. I mean, I guess that I could save you guys the listen, and there's the episode. Oh, that's not very nice. No, I will do as deep dive as I can. We'll go through their policy proposals. We will lay them out, and then we will try to have at least one wrap up the campaign season episode before the election, and then we will see what happens on November 5th. Hopefully we get a decision very close to, if not on, November 5th, because the longer this goes with no resolution, I think the more detrimental it is to the country. So we're going to wrap here. Again, thank you so much for your time. I sincerely appreciate you being here and being a part of this. We will see you on the next episode. Don't be a jerk. Use your damn turn signals, and I'll talk to you next time.